This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own
720
WGN.
Well, we know that the winning Powerball tickets were sold in Tennessee, Florida, and California. We don't know exactly where, other than the California convenience store was in Chino. More on that in a second. Before we get to any of that, though, let's get to Dave and see how much we won other than the Powerball. Dave, you have the numbers?
All right, let's go.
Do you what are the winning numbers?
Okay, the winning numbers, 4, 8, 19, 27, 34.
And the Powerball?
10.
All right, Dave. Okay. And as you scan through the... How many tickets did you buy for the show?
There are, let's see, so we have 6 numbers here. We six. Invested $12.
Everybody put in $2. Tickets. Yeah.
By the way, I offered more. I offered more money for everybody.
And?
I was going to, like, give...
What happened?
Well, like, upstairs in the illegal lottery pool run by our sales department, and a guy that I don't want to mention his name's Bob Coyne. I said, well, just take 20. Just go buy... No, he goes, no, everybody has to give 2.
Yeah, it's weird. People are like that. You have to put in 2, and it has to be your money. You can't borrow it.
Why can't it be the stock market? Why couldn't I have, like, 10 shares of the win, then?
I don't... You
he
can't
talked
do
to
that.
Lawyers and stuff. I mean, he got this totally buttoned down, made sure every...
Be great if he handled his accounts that way.
Okay.
All right. No, Coyne's a good guy.
Yeah.
All right. So what do we win?
Okay. Let's see. So 4, 8, 19. Okay. First line, 2, 5, 9, 17, 32, Powerball, 25. Nothing there.
All right. That's a loser.
Great.
4. There's a number.
There's
we got
a winner.
The first number.
4.
6, 13, 33, 40, and 12. Nothing else.
All right, but that's a one number winner.
But we get nothing.
Yeah, we don't get anything for that.
You don't get anything for one number?
You get the one number and the Powerball also.
Yeah. Oh, that's ridiculous.
Okay, let's see. 7, 10, 40, 54, 60, Powerball 9. Nope.
That's a loser.
5, 12, 41.
Yep.
No.
52 and 60. And Powerball 3, no.
So you got 4 losing tickets so far.
Yeah, but we have 2 more to go.
Where
Steve.
Did you buy these tickets?
I bought these
did
at
you
a
buy these tickets at the loser convenience store?
I bought these. Not only that, I bought these, and the gas station was so crowded that I pulled into the gas pump. I didn't really need gas, but I bought half a tank of gas so that at least I had a place to put my car while I was inside buying the tickets.
I think that's good, and I think that's a good thing to do. I think if you're going to exploit the store for some reason, spend a little money.
Right.
Like if I use a restroom at a convenience store.
You buy something.
I buy something.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
But I could have bought a pack of gum restroom, or something. Though. I didn't need to buy half a tank of gas.
Well, it's the same price right now.
Yeah,
pretty much. Okay. Loser ticket number 5.
5. 15, 20, 22, 38, Powerball 7. Nothing
now,
there.
Now, 34 is close to 38.
It is.
Nothing on that?
Nope.
Okay. One and more. Our last chance to win, Mary. This is it. Mary, you're the beacon of positivity on this show. You're the person we always go to for good vibes. Are you feeling it?
I told you guys
it?
Not to even buy the tickets.
All right, let's go, Dave. What do we got?
You gave me $2, Mary.
Well, I was kind of coerced.
17, 29, 35,
right.
57, 66.
Damn it!
Oh, my.
Powerball 1.
Oh, so we got one number out of all those.
Yeah. Yeah. 6 tickets, 6 numbers per ticket, 36 numbers. We got 1 of 36.
1 of 36. Mm-hmm. Isn't that better than your odds, though? Really?
You know, I don't know.
What about the newsroom pool? Did we win that, Andrea?
We had, you know what, Mary? It's interesting that you say that. Oh, by the way, Mary and I wanted to invite all you guys into the newsroom pool, but I couldn't find you because you were in a meeting.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm in.
I know you're in. Yeah, and it's.
But Dave, did you go to like there's Circle K? Did you go like to Circle L for losers? Is that where you went to buy these tickets?
I did. I didn't know that's what the L stood for.
We at least had a Powerball in the newsroom pool. So
we
I think
did?
We won $2.
We did?
Divided by...
There is a convenience store.
9 of us in it.
There's a convenience store out in the burbs called Stop and Just Give Me Your Money. That's where I went.
The lines were funny, though. But then when I was in line buying the newsroom pool tickets, there was a guy in front of me who was playing Pick 3.
Yeah.
But he did every variation of Pick 3. I think he bought 50 Pick 3 lottery tickets.
He was doing Pick 3 last night?
Yes, he was doing Pick 3
before noon. How about you not do Pick
noon.
3 when everybody's doing the other thing?
Well, that's what I said. I said, isn't there a separate line for Powerball? They said, oh, no, it's just one lottery person, and then there was a clerk for people who wanted to actually buy food and stuff at the store.
Whatever.
It's reverse psychology. You figure everybody else is playing Powerball.
Yeah.
No one's playing pick three.
But he literally, he was calling out the numbers to her. He was going, 1, 2, 3, 6, 4, 8, 1, 6, 5, 3, 2, 1. I'm going, oh, please, please, just let me buy these tickets so we can lose.
7-Eleven, get out of my way.
I bought these at a mobile station.
Oh, you did?
Because I thought we could all be mobile if we had the winning tickets.
It's a good move by you. Yeah. So the newsroom didn't win?
No, I think we just won $2.
So about 20 cents apiece, 30 cents, whatever.
Yes.
Kevin, what are you hearing from the sales department? Did they win?
Doubtful. I haven't heard anything from sales yet. They're probably still sleeping.
I got a text from somebody who said there's $1 million winner in Chattanooga, Tennessee. You could buy Chattanooga, Tennessee for $1 million, couldn't you?
Michigan, I think, had $1 million winner as well.
Hmm. All right. Well, I'm happy for all those folks.
No, you're not.
6:18. Nick DiGilio, Jonas II. Are the Oscar nominations this morning?
Yes.
They are this morning.
7 o'clock. 7:30.
All right. So we'll get a little preview from Nick coming up next. But before we get to that, Mary's here with her bright, sunny traffic trouble spots update. Andrea, can we go live to Chino where the people are outside the store now? Maybe check in with the store owner?
Yeah, this is the store owner. This is Belbir Atwal, who owns the 7-Eleven where the winning Powerball was purchased.
I'm very, very happy whoever person won from here. And I'm so thankful to my Chino Hello people. They support me all year long.
Yes, so he's very happy.
All right.
He is.
All right, hold on a second.
Yeah.
That was an actor.
No. This is the owner of the 7-Eleven. His name is Balbir Atwal. Spoke to ABC News.
So the stereotype of every convenience store is owned by a Middle Easterner.
Well, he's from.
Or a character from The Simpsons.
Yes.
And this is Balbir Atwal?
Balbir Atwal.
Okay. I'm very, very happy.
But you know what? He was sweet. They said, what are you going to do? Because his store gets a $1 million.
It's Harry Shearer. It's Harry Shearer playing the owner of the store.
His store gets a $1 million bonus for selling the winning ticket. And, of course, you know, everybody said, what are you going to do with the money?
I'll be sharing with my employee and the needy people.
His wife and needy people. That's very nice. He and his wife are from India, and they came here.
They're actors. They were hired to play Middle Easterners who run a convenience store.
They're not. This is him.
Very nice.
I'm very, very happy.
I know you're very, very happy, Barbier. 6:20, Nick next.
But we don't have a choice, Robbie. If we don't rush to print, somebody else is going to find these letters and butcher the story. Joe Quimby from the Herald was at the freaking courthouse.
Mike.
What? Why are we hesitating? Barron told us to get law. This is law.
Barron told us to get the system. We need the full scope. That's the only thing that will put an end to this.
So let's take it up to Ben. Let him decide.
We'll take it to Ben when I say it's time.
It's time, Robbie. It's time.
Clip from what I think was the best movie of last year, Spotlight. Mark Ruffalo and Michael Keaton, they're both great in it. Nick DiGilio joins us now as the Oscars will be announced by way of nomination this morning, at least at 7:30, a little more than an hour from now. Good morning, Nick. How are you?
Morning.
Where did you put Spotlight?
It was number 13 on my list.
Really? Why didn't you like it?
What are you talking about?
13,
I thought,
man.
It was the 13th best movie I saw last year, and I saw about 100 movies last year.
It's not that good. It's not that good. I would have had a top five with you.
Yeah. Well.
So what didn't work? Okay, Cranky. What didn't work for you?
No, it worked. It's a terrific movie. I have to say that last year, 2015, was an exceptional movie. See, an exceptional year. I mean, a year where my number 13 on any other year could have been number one. It was that kind of year. I mean, the quality of films from 2015, the last year that I remember being this good was 1999. And in 1999, I specifically remember that in my top 10, I could have taken any one of those and it would have been the best movie in 2 years. And that's how I felt about the films this year. I mean, it was an incredible year. So,
what was your top movie? I forgot.
Come on.
No, I forgot. Tell me again.
Come on.
What was it?
Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah, I know. He had a 12-way tie for second. That's how we got the spotlight.
By the way, my prediction, and you guys, all you people who you know, you guys, especially on the morning show, you laugh at me because I've seen Mad Max Fury Road 29 times.
Oh, we laugh at you for other reasons than that.
Well, I know that, but this is a specific reason. I'm telling you right now, when the nominations come in, Mad Max Fury Road will lead the nominations this morning.
Based
on everything. It'll be I'm saying 9 nominations, at least 9 nominations.
What, like Most Mad, Most Max? What are the, yeah. What sort of awards?
No,
are they
I think they're it's, no. It's going to win Best Everything plus one, Best Everything in Earth, Best Everything in Universe,
Best Totally Cool Movie.
Yes.
All right, best actor. Who's going to win Best Actor?
Well,
or he's going to be nominated, I should say.
Yeah. The nominations, I think, these are my predictions. Bryan Cranston for Trumbo.
Yep.
Matt Damon for The Martian. Leonardo DiCaprio for The Revenant. And by the way, I just give it to him now because he's going to win it.
Well, he should. I mean, he's great, and he had an actual bear eat half of his body.
That's right. He actually was killed by a bear and came back to life.
Yeah.
Eddie Redmayne for The Danish Girl, and I'm saying, and this one is not, I think this guy's going to sneak in there because Hollywood loves him. I think Johnny Depp's going to get nominated for Black Mass.
You think so?
I do. The other nominees.
I was disappointed in that movie.
Me too. I didn't like it. I think he's good in it, but, you know, they love him in Hollywood. But the other possible ones are Michael Fassbender for Steve Jobs, Steve Carell for The Big Short, and Michael B. Jordan for Creed.
There's something I like The Big Short a lot, but there was something about Carell's voice in The Big Short that I couldn't get beyond. I just couldn't get over it.
Like a little
too much, a little too much of an affectation, a little too much of I'm trying to be the nerd, like a nerd on the spectrum, that kind of thing.
You don't think Michael Keaton?
That's a supporting performance.
All right, best actress.
Best actress, Kate Blanchett for Carol. Again, these are my predictions. Brie Larson for Room.
Right.
Charlotte Rampling for 45 Years. Saoirse Ronan for Brooklyn. And Jennifer Lawrence for Joy.
Andrea just saw Brooklyn last night.
Yeah, Brooklyn last night. I loved it. What a beautiful, beautiful movie.
Yeah. The ones that could sneak in there outside of that, Lily Tomlin for Grandma, Alicia Vikander for The Danish Girl, and the one that I'm rooting for, and a lot of people are thinking is going to get in there, Charlize Theron for Mad Max. A lot of people think she's going to get nominated, and I think she should, but I don't think she will.
She was totally mad and totally Max in that movie.
She kicked massive amounts of ass in that movie.
Totally. Supporting actor.
Supporting actor, Christian Bale in The Big Short.
He was great.
He was terrific.
So great. You know, Christian Bale, by all accounts, is a complete jerk in life. I don't care. I don't have to live with him. I love watching him work.
Me too. He's one of the best actors on the planet. No
He's tremendous.
Mark Rylance for Bridge of Spies.
Oh, there's my guy. That's my guy. That's the guy. It's not, I don't think there's a shot that he wins. I so want him to win. I at least want him to be nominated.
Steve, he's the favorite.
Is he really?
Oh, yeah. He's the favorite to win. No,
I don't want to get my hopes up. He's so great in that movie.
He is. He's great. Chicago's own Michael Shannon for 99 Homes.
Yep.
Sylvester Stallone for Creed, and I'm saying Tom Hardy for The Revenant, and part of that is because he's in Mad Max.
supporting actress,
Jennifer Jason Leigh for The Hateful Eight, Rooney Mara for Carol, Rachel McAdams for Spotlight, Kate Winslet for Steve Jobs, and Helen Mirren for Trumbo, and your sleeper there is, Jane Fonda for Youth, because, you know, she hasn't been nominated in a really, really long time, and she's Hollywood royalty, so she might get a nomination.
Kate Winslet won the Globe, right?
She did.
Worthy? Was she great? I haven't seen Steve Jobs.
The movie is really good. She's fine, and it's not a great performance. She's getting nominated for it because she's Kate Winslet, and that's what happens every year. But the performance out of this group, without question, is Jennifer Jason Leigh in The Hateful Eight. She's unbelievable in that movie, and I hope she wins.
The Hateful Eight, is that different than Brooklyn?
Just a little. It's about 2 hours longer.
Best director.
Best director, Todd Haynes for Carol, Alejandro Iñárritu for The Revenant, Tom McCarthy for Spotlight, George Miller for The Greatest Film Ever Made, Ridley Scott for The Martian. So, and the other guys that might sneak in there, Spielberg might sneak in there for Bridge of Spies, and Lenny Abramson might sneak in there for Room. And on a very interesting note, Adam McKay got the DGA nomination for The Big Short. He might get a nomination too.
I hope he does, because I think the creativity that he showed in that movie, including a simple thing but it's something that nobody else had conceptualized, which is explaining a very deep, semi-boring topic by putting a hot blonde in a hot tub, those type of moves. I think he should. I absolutely think he should be nominated.
I agree. I think he should have been nominated for the other guys, but that's just me.
Yeah, amen to that.
And then the last one is the big one, the best picture.
Yep.
And they go with, I don't know how many they're going to choose. They like to change this up every year. Sometimes it's 10, sometimes it's 8, sometimes it's 9. And they decided to change it from 5 nominees to more than 5 about 6 years ago or 5 years ago in an effort to get people to go to see more movies.
Right.
Because a lot of people, when the nominations come out, there are a lot of completists out there who want to see everything that's nominated.
Yep.
So, but, you know, they don't increase the director nominations. So evidently, if there are 9 nominees, that means 4 movies were directed by a robot.
Right.
Evidently.
Right.
I'm going to say they're going to go with 8. And these are the nominees that I think are going to get nominated for Best Picture. Mad Max Fury Road, Spotlight, The Revenant, The Big Short, Carol, The Martian, Brooklyn, and Room. Those are the ones that I think are going to get
nothing from Adam Sandler.
No. Pixels won't even get nominated for special effects. He did lead the Razzies.
Yeah, I hate
those
Razzies.
Nominations came up.
Hack so. Move, Razzies, whatever.
Yeah, I agree.
Total
I agree.
Hack move. All right, buddy. We're going to match
trust
these.
Me on this. Trust me, I'm telling you, Mad Max, 9 nominations, including Best Picture
I know.
And Best Director.
Totally. Just I'm like the you. Powerball. I know you're right.
Oh, I'm right.
All right, thanks, man. Hold on. That's Nick. All right, we got to get to Chuck Todd coming up, but first, the big story right after this.
Nikki Haley, very nice woman. She said, I'm an angry person. And they said to me, they said you were an angry person. I said, I am. I'm very angry because I hate what's happening to our country. I am angry. I'm telling you.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
WGN Chicago.
That's the Trumpster. We are going to talk to Chuck Todd. Chuck's scheduled to appear here in just a second. Mary, the wrong way driver on the Stevenson that is being reported by multiple sources.
Central.
And do we know if this person is still on the Stevenson?
I'm guessing no. I do not see a huge backup in that area. We had an earlier accident outbound before Damon. That one's been cleared. So right now it's just a report. So. Okay. Haven't heard anything else since, and I can't see it on the camera as well. So,
Chuck Todd standing by. Chuck's ready to go. Okay, let me get to Chuck, the senior NBC political correspondent. Even though he's only 24 years old and fresh-faced youngster, just out of school, barely paying off his loans. Good morning, Chuck. How are you?
Morning, Steve.
Nice to have you on as always. So, overnight last night, this Ted Cruz story breaks that he mishandled some FEC filings on loans he took to run for the Senate back in Texas. You know, as much as I'd like to punch out Ted Cruz, this doesn't feel like much to me. Am I missing something?
Yeah, it's not much. I think what the hit was designed to do was to get the words Goldman Sachs and connected to his name. I mean, you know, when you look at a hit, and I always look and it's like, all right, what are they trying to get at here?
Mm-hmm.
You know what he did, you know, and it was like, and why did Cruz probably do it the way he did it? They weren't wanting to advertise that they got a special deal from Goldman Sachs, because what was he doing? Railing against Wall Street, railing against that stuff. So, you know, that's what they're trying to do here, paying him a little bit that way. And, it's a ding, but I don't think it's anything devastating.
Isn't the net effect of most of these the amount of time it takes to respond to them versus the actual impact of what they really truly mean? In other words, it sucks up media coverage time?
Sucks them off a day. I mean, I'm trying to remember the last time Ted Cruz got to control his own message for the day. You know, it was sometime before Donald Trump found found love for Canada. but it's been a good week since Ted Cruz has been able to control his own message, and you know that can take a toll.
Chuck, I want to ask you. You had some interesting rhetoric yesterday when you were talking about Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. I think you described this perfectly because it's really been hard to find, the drive on behalf of both. You called it a passion gap.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of expand on that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's sort of, you hear the phrase, you know, hearts and minds. And in general, when you're trying to win people over on something, and you see it, you know, Sanders is absolutely appealing to the progressive heart, the liberal heart, and you see it with the more idealistic crowd, and you know, those under 45 a little more idealistic than those over 45, and he's dominating among those under 45. There's a real enthusiasm. He gets bigger crowds. You know, Hillary Clinton is at this point, she's not trying the passion stage. She's trying to just simply win the minds. She's not even trying to win hearts anymore. You know, she's out with a TV ad on electability. Nothing wrong with that. But trying to remind, when you're trying to remind Democrats, hey, who's the one that can take these guys on, you're essentially admitting, we know you're not in love with us, but hey, why don't you make the practical decision? And for a caucus, early states, you know, that's not the best place to be if you're already having to make pragmatic arguments at a time when, you know, there's a lot more passion involved.
You know, the majority of the country hasn't connected yet with this for obvious reasons. It's timing, and the majority of the country never connects till summer prior to a presidential election. Having said that, Bernie Sanders, for people that don't know him, comes off as kind of the wacky uncle that was kind of fun to see around Thanksgiving. But, you know, it's okay that you don't see him that much the rest of the year. But that's in Iowa. I mean, look, I got to give the guy credit. I had heard very little about him in all of his years in the Senate. And for somebody with almost no impact to make the splash that he's made is either reflective of the weakness of the field or that he had something to say for a long time and he finally got up and said it. And I'm not sure which of those it is.
I think it's a combination of all of it. And I think, you know, you're being too kind when you say weakness of the field. I mean, you have to say some of this is on her. And you have to ask yourself, what if her main opponent had been Joe Biden? What if her main opponent had been Elizabeth Warren? What if her main opponent, you know, you're starting to wonder if a 74-year-old semi-gadfly backbench senator can suddenly make this a race. I think it's a little more reflective of Hillary Clinton. Look, there is, pause isn't the right word, but there certainly isn't enthusiasm about her. And is it her fault? Is it her last name? Is it the year? You know, we've been trying to go through what changed in this race over the last 2 weeks that suddenly shrunk this lead? Well, you had Trump going after Bill Clinton on the personal stuff. We have had this constant sort of conversation with the country, thanks mostly to Trump, about, you know, anti-Washington, anti-establishment. And, you know, so the president of the state's talking about broken politics. Well, you throw all that together, you know, Hillary Clinton is somebody who's a veteran politician. Well, veteran politicians aren't popular right now. Hillary Clinton, and it could be there's a little bit of Clinton fatigue. I can't tell you how many anecdotal, it's hard to measure this, but how many voters you run into, Democrats you run into, you say, oh, I like Hillary Clinton, but I just don't want all the drama back. I don't want all the drama of the 90s back, you know, that sort of thing. That was a big benefit to Obama in 08, and, you know, who knows, maybe that's still sitting in the back of the mind. Again, that's a hard thing to poll. You know, we've always wondered, can you poll the idea of Clinton fatigue? But you hear it, it's anecdotal. And, you know, if it's worth a couple of points and all these things are worth a couple of points, well, then lo and behold, look at Bernie Sanders.
Well, you know, you're a sports guy, and you make an interesting point because it almost is as if Hillary Clinton is playing to the level of their opponent. Not that the Bears ever did that this year. But, you know, take Bernie Sanders too lightly and suddenly you wake up and he might beat you in Iowa and New Hampshire as opposed to somebody who would have been a threat the whole way.
It's true. You know, I also think her attacks on Sanders have just kind of fallen flat because it doesn't take much time. I mean, right now she's trying to hit him on, you know, oh, you know, he's going to mess around with health care again. Do you really want to do that? But he's for universal health care. You know, that's some progressives are going to say, you know, that's the thing I don't like about Obamacare. You know, a lot of progressives thought it didn't go far enough. On the gun thing, yeah, I think he's vulnerable there, but she was not the face of gun control. You know, as Joe Biden said, on some of these issues for voters, she's just as new to them as he is, if not more so. So I think that so it's made it so that some of the attacks by her have run a little hollow, I think.
Chuck, what can we expect to see from tonight's debate? Anything different? Anything riveting?
Anybody leaving the race in the middle of the debate?
Well, look, there's so many different weird divides going on, right? You have Trump versus Cruz. And I think that's going to, I think this time it will actually show itself on TV. Cruz seems genuinely irritated at Trump and genuinely upset. You've got the pylon that's taking place in the establishment lane. So Rubio Christie, I think, could get a little ugly. Jeb Rubio could get ugly. And then there's Carson, the wild card here, because he's fading fast. And desperate politicians can sometimes do things unexpected. So, I think it's going to be very lively, and it could be very nasty.
Chuck Todd, Meet the Press on Sunday, and we're only a couple of weeks short of Iowa, 9 o'clock here at NBC5 in Chicago. Check your local listings around the country. Guest lineup yet, or are you still working on that?
Well, I do, but we have to wait a day before I'm popping them all out. But it's I got both storylines represented that we just talked about, and I'll leave it at that.
Okay, no, that's fair enough.
Candidate front. And then I do have one little thing that we just did yesterday. Actually spoke to Amal Clooney. She's working Capitol Hill trying to get United States interest in putting sanctions on a small island nation called the Maldives who've gone through some democratic repression.
Is she as fascinating as we hear? And I'm not being flip at all when I say that.
No, she is. It's real deal. You know, everything you've read, I have to say the most impressive thing was her lack of entourage and her lack of pretension.
She's got to get rid of that deadbeat husband.
Yeah, you know. What are you going to do?
What's he ever going to make of himself?
She's got to support him dragging around.
Exactly. Total weight. Chuck, always a pleasure. I appreciate the time.
All right, Steve.
Thanks, man. At Chuck Todd on social media everywhere. It's traffic time. Back to Mary. What's happening? Everybody going in the right direction? Yeah. Three Powerball winners, Tennessee, California, and Florida. And the Chino location in California is the only location, I think, that is public so far.
Actually, we have the others. You want to know them?
What are they?
Let's see. Mumford, Tennessee. They just announced Mumford, Tennessee. And
the town, or that's the name of a guy in Tennessee?
I believe it's Mumford. I'm sorry.
Mumford, Tennessee.
And the other is Melbourne Beach, Florida.
That's a nice area.
No. Yeah. Those are the other two.
All right. Thanks, man. We have, each morning at the top of the show, we have a first caller prize that we normally give away. I didn't do it today. So in lieu of the first caller, I'd like to go to our other regular feature. Kev, you know how we do a text of the day all the time?
Yeah,
you know
absolutely.
How we do that regular feature?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So here today is today's text of the day.
Sounds like the queen is entering the room.
A lot of fanfare.
Here she comes. Hello.
I don't think
hello,
that's formal wave, enough. Wave. Don't you think it needs to take it up a notch? Here's today's text of the day.
Yes.
There it goes again.
From the 630. Steve Cochran needs to be gone. By the way, Cochran is spelled wrong. It's O-C-H-R-A-N.
Would they put Corcoran?
R-O-N.
Oh.
Normally I get an E.
I see a lot of Corcoran for you.
Corcoran, yeah. Cochran with an E. Steve Cochran needs to be gone. His voice is annoying. He's not funny. Do you think they may want to do the impressions? Because, I'm a master of 1,000 voices.
And could animals, be. Too.
Steve Cochran needs to be gone. His voice is annoying. He's not funny. He interrupts. He's disrespectful. He's horrible. I don't get it. Nick DiGilio is the best. And Steve and Johnny, too. Everyone else is great except Steve. You must know this. ! Andrea can do the show without him. She's constantly saving his ass, and he's not smart. Thank you.
And that's your text of the day.
That's today's text of the day.
Is that for your mom, Andrea?
Actually, it's for my mom.
Oh.
And for being today's text of the day, that individual wins Air Supply tickets at the Arcata Theater in St. Charles on January 22nd. So you guys have to track the texter down.
Can't wait to talk to him.
Yeah, please let me know what they say when you call. you know, Air Supply, you get all the hits. You get all out of, I'm all out of love. I want him to text back and say it's annoying when I sing. Or Making Love Out of Nothing. Making Love Out of Nothing at All.
Are you going to sing the whole record?
Yeah, I am.
Okay. Is Wham performing with him?
They couldn't get Wham.
Oh, darn.
Get tickets online. They could get Andrew Ridgely. Was that his name?
Yeah, that was the second guy in Wham.
Yeah, but he's just woo.
Whoa.
Yeah. To be full Wham, George Michael would have had to show
up.
Get tickets online at O-Shows, that's the letter O-Shows.com, or 630-9627,000. Also give our texter for the text of the day, a Chevy Drive, Chicago.com, WGN Radio, stainless steel travel mug, and a bag of Papa Nicholas coffee, courtesy of your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Thank you for writing. Mom.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
WGN Radio is the sound of Chicago.
720 WGN.
Yeah. 7-Eleven, and speaking of that, we had three Powerball winners from last night. None of the individuals have come forward so far. They're each going to get, is it $550 million or so in change?
Just over, yeah, just over $550, which is really good.
I've actually seen people complaining.
Right, I got an email.
Yeah, you got an email for somebody. And what was the premise of the email?
They just said, you know, it's really not that much money. It would have been better if one person won the one. Again, this is just one email. But it would have been better if one person would have won the $1.5
billion. Like they should have a rule that only one person could
win.
Yeah,
and then they said it only comes out to $550 million.
Yeah,
and then after taxes.
Yeah, how are you going to live with that?
And then you got to pay the store, but that doesn't come from the winner's winnings.
You'd be lucky if you got $150 million left.
No.
Rip off.
I think people are just maybe bitter that they didn't win, which is understandable.
Some people could see ugly in a beautiful sunrise, couldn't they? Please. Some people could see ugly in a new puppy. It's 7:12. Rick Pearson joins us now at RAP30, RAP30. And finest political writer in America, and host of the Sunday Spin. Who's a guest this weekend?
I have Christine Mardonio, the Illinois Senate Republican leader, will be joining us.
How is it that Mike Madigan can cancel, or I should say not convene, session on time? Is that legal?
Sure. You know, at the discretion of the leaders, unless a special session is called, which is something that the governor can do, it's something that the two leaders can do. But the excuse given was that there isn't enough of a workload to convene session. I mean, you can argue that the lack of a state budget is pretty significant workload.
And because he doesn't even show up for the meetings to discuss the state budget workload, what is the real reason that you're hearing from people as to why Madigan would do this? Just more of a negotiating tactic?
Yeah, I mean, there's no progress in these meetings. And even talking to Republican leader Redonio, that it tends to be just kind of a recitation of talking points. And the governor and Republicans say, well, here's this. And when it comes to those union weakening provisions, the Democrats say no.
At what point does President Cullerton have to break with Madigan and go, I've had enough of this?
Well, there's been some signs of that have occurred, but you still have to have, you know, support in the House to be able to pass anything. And if it's something that Madigan feels will weaken the Democratic majority, he's not going to go for it.
You have known of and worked around Madigan. You've spoken to him many times, many being probably a handful, because you're one of the few people he does speak to. Does it surprise you how much he's stuck to this and how long this is taking?
What surprises me, one, is that we're still at this point that we don't have a state budget, and that we're running on this kind of court-ordered autopilot system that really is going to be devastating for the taxpayers to catch up to at some point. But that having been said, we're in 2016. We're in a critical election year. The stakes are much higher than they were even last year. And to see any progress anytime soon with the political stakes at play, I think is just very doubtful.
this has gone on a record amount of time, or are we not at the record yet?
We're certainly at the modern record. We're certainly, you know, I've been doing this for 33 years, and it's never, we've never been in this situation before, ever.
And we've spoken on previous, on previous Thursdays, we've spoken about this many times, about how the public is not involved on the level of outrage and burning clubs in the streets and all of that, because 90 to 95% of the budget or of the state is still functioning on these emergency provisions. At what point does the bottom of that drop out?
Well, I think, one, we have to, we're seeing small signs. There's a lot of people that all of a sudden are receiving tickets or being notified that their license plate sticker is expired. And when they go to renew, they find out that it costs them an extra $20 because they're a month late. That's because the Secretary of State says it doesn't have the money to send out the traditional mail notices that it's time to get a new sticker for your car license. So there's little things like that, but at the same time, you've got much bigger things. You've got all kinds of various child care agencies that are not taking in new clients and are trying to struggle with the clients that they have. And then we get to the big issue now, looking, we thought it would be January, but now it looks like February, the whole issue of the Chicago Public Schools. And once again, still very intense rhetoric between Governor Rauner and Mayor Emanuel about where's the money going to come from to avoid massive layoffs and the potential of a teacher strike.
Speaking of the teacher strike, the timing that we're hearing all the time is that the teachers are going to go out sometime in March, regardless, because it'll screw with standardized testing, and there's money that would come in over standardized testing if the teachers aren't around to administrate those standardized tests. Does this lack of a budget change that timing, if that in fact is true?
Well, I think certainly the prospect of very rapid layoffs would accelerate that strike process. But there is a legal process that also has to be done to go through the Labor Relations Board to establish that strike take place.
Rick, what did you think of Napoleon Harris's proposal yesterday, holding a big news conference in Springfield, saying that he wants to introduce a bill that could recall anybody, kind of building off LaShawn Ford's bill of recalling Mayor Emanuel, but this could be mayors, aldermen, anybody who's elected, basically, in the state?
Well, and certainly LaShawn Ford kind of started the ball rolling, saying that his bill was more directly aimed at Rahm Emanuel, even though there's legal questions about whether it could affect him. But I think with Napoleon Harris, one thing a lot of people have talked about, if there's one thing they'd like to see in LaShawn Ford's bill, would be expanding it out to other mayors, to other elected officials, members of the legislature. One thing to keep in mind with Napoleon Harris, he's also a candidate for the United States Senate Democratic nomination. Campaign not off to a big start here. So this is kind of, I see it one way as trying to steal some of LaShawn Ford's thunder by trying to push this bill and get some publicity.
Stand by. We'll get quick traffic here and then a couple more minutes with Rick Pearson, host of the Sunday Spin, Sunday mornings at 7. Back with Rick Pearson. A couple of minutes more with Rick. All right, so let me just wrap up this Madigan piece of this by saying, regardless of what you think of Governor Rauner, if Governor Rauner and President Cullerton and Christine Rodonio are all sitting down at a table and the one missing element is Madigan, how is it not just about Madigan?
Well, I mean, I agree. You have to have all the players at the table, particularly given the majority that Madigan commands in the Illinois House. But that having been said, you know, we've been through this game long enough that we know that everything that the governor has proposed has this union weakening poison pill attached to it. And that's not going to fly in the makeup of the Illinois General Assembly. So then I think it becomes incumbent upon looking at things you can do on both sides, not keep going at loggerheads over ideological issues that are not going to make it through the political climate that exists in the Illinois legislature today. It takes two to tango. And yes, Madigan's not dancing right now. He should be at the table. But that having been said, you need to start narrowing the focus on looking at things that can get done, things and changes in workers' compensation, changes perhaps in, involving civil liability reforms, those kinds of things where there has been talk about this. But if the union weakening agenda is not going to make it through the Illinois General Assembly.
Right, but if I have a disagreement with you over something, I can't even present the idea you might be interested in if you don't show up for the meeting.
Correct, correct.
So, I don't know when the public is going to connect with the fact that, and including, by the way, union members, that Mike Madigan isn't serving you, he's failing you by at least not showing up. Because, by the way, Mike Madigan shows up and Governor Rauner sticks to the same line that he is dead set against. It's not hard for Mike Madigan to get coverage. I know he hates us, Rick, but he can call you, he can call me, he can call anybody. You'd certainly get an opportunity to say exactly what went down in the meeting.
That's correct. And truly, when he has attended meetings and then spoken to the media, he sticks by his talking points as well. So we're still at the stage, truly, of people with talking points and nobody talking about any action to get us out of this mess. And it is a growing, growing mess. Anything that gets resolved, I mean, you know, we're poised to have the governor deliver a budget message for a budget year ahead when we don't have a budget right now. And that's the incongruity of that is colossal, because in the end, whenever we get around to fixing the budget mess for this year, it's going to require deeper cuts and higher taxes than if it had been dealt with at the very beginning.
Yeah, it's a twilight zone. Is there anything that you can think of, have heard someone suggest, have heard someone talk about that the public can do? Because, you know, people driving to work now, people going about their business this morning, you know, maybe this is news to them, but it pisses them off, and it should. But,
well,
but they'd like to know what to do about it and if they can do anything.
Well, and truly part of it, too, and I mentioned about the political ramping up, is you have both parties here in Illinois acting like it's Washington, D.C., and this winner-take-all mentality. I mean, really, what I've had folks from the Small Business Advocacy Council on my show, and it's like, you know, you don't understand the effect that this budget stalemate has on the small businesses. And, right. And everybody's so supportive of small business as job creators, those kinds of things. And if anything, along with just people, you know, just saying we're tired of this, is perhaps more activity of the small business community on really getting a budget done.
You can't have one person be able to create this kind of gridlock in the state. And until further notice, my opinion, that one person is Mike Madigan. It can't be set up that way. So if there's ever been a time where the system needs to be broken, and I mean rebroken, this is it. Clearly, the system is already broken. But this, you know, in Mike Madigan's big picture, whatever his twisted view of a winning outcome is here, in Mike Madigan's big picture, all he's doing is shining light on how he is mismanaging his incredible power in this state and the fact that he has more power than the role deserves.
Well, I mean, as I said, it takes two to tango. And yes, Madigan's been around as Speaker of the House since 1983, except for 2 years. And certainly he'll acknowledge that he deserves some of the blame that has brought us to this point. But at the same time, the governor, there's an onus on the governor as well to recognize what the political climate is. And the governor has made no secret that, you know, part of his desire is to destroy Mike Madigan's majority. And so instead of everybody just thinking this is some kind of pure conversation about governmental policy and how we move Illinois forward, there's also an overhanging political element that exists on both the Republican side and the Democratic side.
Well, you know, the governor's been on the show a couple times recently and in both cases said, I absolutely have no desire to break up the unions. If he's lying, then that will be borne out. But he is asking for adjustments. He's asking for things to be done, whether they're fair or not, or whether they're union poisoning or not. The only way the public can get a true read on it is if these negotiations go on. So enough of this. Quickly, Rahm Emanuel and the governor, how bad is this relationship now? Again, Rauner was on here earlier this week, and he said he's incredibly disappointed in who the mayor's turned out to be.
Well, and here, you know, as we've talked before, with Emanuel, with the kind of crisis of confidence that exists in Chicago government, it's out of playbook 101 of the political playbook, is that you kick the opponent when he's down. Emanuel has been just as vociferous in his criticism of Rauner, but the idea that Rahm Emanuel was going to be a broker for any kind of grand deal in Springfield, the more the rhetoric ratchets up. And the fact that these two were friends, and yes, there's, I said last week, that, you know, they know what they're talking about. They're big boys in the room, and rhetoric's part of the game. But still, that kind of rhetoric doesn't do anything to give any people hope that we're going to get over the hurdles, the financial hurdles that the city of Chicago faces and that the state of Illinois faces. Not much confidence that's going to take place anytime soon.
But isn't there, and this is more of a general question, it takes you a little bit out of the reporter mode, but isn't there an advantage for Rahm Emanuel to stand up and say, look, I'm not picking teams here. I'm saying here's what the city of Chicago needs, and here's why this needs to get done, and not from a press conference in the middle of the city?
Well, and yeah, there is an advantage to that, but the fact is that the governor has repeatedly said that he wants to leverage the city's needs, to leverage Rahm Emanuel to support that controversial aspects of that turnaround agenda before the city will get any kind of help, before Chicago Public Schools get any kind of help. And yeah, political leveraging is always part of the game. But Emanuel says, again, you know, I'm not going to turn my backs on these people, even though he and certainly the Chicago Teachers Union, which has called for his resignation, it's not like Emanuel's any great has any great love from organized labor coming, but he's not willing to go to the extremes that the governor wants.
Yeah, the idealistic view of this, and I grant you, I'm way too idealistic about it, but the idealistic view of this is, do you want to be right or do you want to do the right thing? I've never lived in a time in my life where there's been more people in power who are only interested in winning the argument.
Well, and that's what I was talking about this Washington-style politics, the winner-take-all politics coming to Illinois, because, you know, you can argue about whether you viewed these certain policies, you know, as right or wrong, but there was always a statesman aspect to what ultimately occurred. And the day of statesmanship in the Illinois General Assembly is long gone, and it's truly... It's about winners. It's about winning. And it's not about really getting the all-important job done for the people of Illinois.
Rick Pearson, Sunday Morning Sunday Spin. Christine Redonio, the guest, starts at what time?
7 to 9.
And in your Chicago Tribune and at chicagotribune.com, at RAP30, RAP30, on your social media. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you.
7:29. We're back with a big story. And Pat Brady previewing tonight's Republican debate, and Senator Durbin, all before 8 on 720 WGN. 7:43, the Oscar nominations are underway, and they work their way up to the major acting and best picture category. Anything of significance yet?
They have announced the nominees for Best Supporting Actor and Best Supporting Actress.
Okay, what do you want?
They announced those. Christian Bale, Tom Hardy, Mark Ruffalo, Mark Rylance, your guy, and Sylvester Stallone for Creed. Best Supporting.
So Nick called all of that.
Yep. Best Supporting Actress, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Rooney Mara, Rachel McAdams for Spotlight, Alicia Vikander, Kate Winslet as well.
And I think Nick had all of that as well.
I think he did as well, yeah.
All right, you'll keep
now
it.
Now they're doing a lead actress, if I don't know if you want
you
to.
Keep, no, we're 10 of time. Okay. But you monitor it for us?
I will do it right now.
Preview of tonight's Republican debate in South Carolina, North Charleston specifically. Pat Brady joins me, at Pat_Brady from Next Generation Strategies. Good morning, Pat. How are you?
Morning. How you doing?
Doing great. I know you just got back from Arizona. I hope that was a good trip.
Yep, dropped the oldest off at school, and it was 70 degrees yesterday, so great trip.
All right, good. Well, I'm glad you're back. And tonight we have another Republican throwdown. Now, I mentioned this earlier when I was talking to Chuck Todd. I would love for this to be bad news for Ted Cruz, but the Wall Street Journal and New York Times story this morning that he misreported or failed to report a loan from Goldman Sachs that helped him get elected to the Senate in 2012, it just doesn't feel like a big deal to me.
Yeah, I don't think that's a big enough story. It's a little chink in his armor, but not enough. You know, the bigger problem for him, I think, is going to be, and it might start tonight, they've been going at each other, Cruz and Trump, the last 48 hours, and it'll be interesting to see if they go at each other tonight.
Christie, in focus groups, and this is, gets a little deep in the weeds, but if you pay attention enough to political news, occasionally you'll see Frank Luntz and others who are focus group types get into rooms. And Iowans have seemed to respond very favorably to Chris Christie recently. Do you expect any surprises out of him?
Yeah, he's really been on kind of a roll the last couple months. He's spent a ton of time in New Hampshire, which is a perfect state for him because it's really, truly retail politics. They expect you to be in their homes and talking to him. And I've been in a room with him a lot, and he is really, really good in the small group. So it's not surprising. That being said, my folks over there tell me that Cruz has a great organization. There are a lot of evangelicals that caucus or participate in the caucus process. So he right now looks like he's the one that'll win over there. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Christie do very well tonight because he's a great debater and do better in Iowa than expectations.
Who's next to drop out?
You know, you have to have a reason to drop out or maybe a reason to be there. Some of these guys are just there to sell books or raise money for their PACs, the Huckabees, the Santorums. So, but the dropouts will come, I think, after the New Hampshire primary where the establishment, three or four guys, see, hey, there's no path for me. Let's get together because the last thing we need is Trump or Cruz at the top of the ticket.
Is tonight one of Jeb Bush's last stands?
I think we've been hearing that for about 4 months. This is his last stand.
Is this
stand.
His last stand?
Yeah. I don't know. I think New Hampshire might be his last stand. He does have a lot of money, which can keep him going, but he hasn't had much success going after Trump. I think the big story for tonight is going to be whether the three or four guys trying the establishment, quote-unquote guys, are they going to go after Cruz? But I think they're going to go after Rubio because I think they're more fearful of Rubio right now being the establishment guy that will ultimately emerge and win. So Marco Rubio is probably going to get attacked pretty good tonight.
But if you're Bush or Christie or Kasich, there's no reason to play nice now. There's no reason. I mean, you've watched this thing degrade into the mud wrestling that it's turned into for months. So if you're going to get any noise now, regardless how qualified you are, and all three of them are dramatically more qualified than the two knuckleheads at the top, don't they have to do something dramatic tonight?
You know, some guys, men or women, just don't do Donald Trump very well. What I mean is they don't do mean well. They don't do stupid well. Trump does it perfectly. I mean, he's a TV actor. He's playing to his TV audience. So it doesn't work for some of these guys. I think
be like when Al Gore started yelling back in the day. It just didn't sound right.
Yeah, it just didn't fit his personality. And I don't think the people that are actually serious policy people, like the guys we've just been talking about, are very good at that. Rubio is one of the best debaters I've ever seen, but I don't think he does really well as an attack dog. He's better as a policy wonk. But remember, you know, the two front runners, or particularly Trump, only 30% of the Republican Party supports him, so 70% doesn't. So I think you just got to be patient, do as well as you can in New Hampshire, and see how it shakes out.
It's tonight on, what is it, Fox News tonight? Is it Fox News?
Yeah.
Fox News.
Yeah,
tonight.
Fox Business. Fox Business.
Oh, it's Fox Business tonight at 8 o'clock our time. Thanks, buddy.
All right, see ya.
That's at @Pat_Brady, Next Generation Public, or Next Generation Strategies, I should say. .com. Senator Durbin standing by. We'll get to traffic, but first, give me a couple more nominees.
All right. Best actor in a leading role, Bryan Cranston, Matt Damon, Leonardo DiCaprio, Michael Fassbender, and Eddie Redmayne. And best actress in a leading role, Cate Blanchett, Brie Larson, Jennifer Lawrence, Charlotte Rampling, and Saoirse Ronan for Brooklyn.
And Mad Max has 10 nominations so far, so Nick is still 5 short of his number.
Including Best Picture. We'll tell you about Best Picture
in a moment.
Coming up.
Senator Durbin after the traffic. The traffic is now, and Mary's here. Just ahead of Senator Durbin, give me a couple more of the nominees.
Okay, Best Picture. There are 8 this year. Big Short, Bridge of Spies, Brooklyn, Mad Max, The Martian, The Revenant, Room, and our favorite, Spotlight.
And that was, again, Best Picture.
That was Best Picture nominees for this year.
All right. Senator Durbin joins me now. Good morning, Senator. How are you?
Good morning, Steve. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. You normally have a tradition of having Illinois service members join you at the State of the Union. Did you do that again this year?
I did. Gary Sharp is a major who is originally from Buffalo Grove, and he is a nurse at Walter Reed Hospital. He's been in combat zones for us. Great fellow. Five kids. His daughter's in the Air Force, just deployed. I've done this, I think, for 10 or 11 years. My first guest, incidentally, was Tammy Duckworth, who was had just been shot down over a rock in a helicopter. Came in as my guest a few weeks after that terrible incident, and I met her for the first time. Now, of course, she's a member of Congress running for the Senate.
What's the state of her campaign? We haven't heard much.
Good. She's on schedule, and sadly, this is the first thing we report in terms of raising enough money to have her message known. Mm-hmm. She faces a primary. State Senator Napoleon Harris and Andrea Zopp are running against her in a primary. Her polling numbers are good, but we're not taking anything for granted.
The national campaign has to be a pretty hot topic in Washington every 4 years. You've been through a lot of these. Where does this one rank? I mean, does the inside the Beltway crowd sit around and giggle? I mean, what's the reaction to what's going on both sides?
Stunned silence on the Republican side. Stunned silence. Mm-hmm. I will tell you that Senator Cruz, could count on one hand, and had plenty of room, his personal friends in the United States Senate. He is a loner. Many of the Republicans have really decried his tactics, shutting down the government, right, things like that. And he's a front runner. And then there's Donald Trump, who doesn't fit any description, and is now being criticized, not just by his fellow candidates, but by leaders like Governor Nikki Haley, who in the response to the State of the Union address really made it clear that she didn't care for Trump's brand of politics. So they are stunned that the two leaders, and those two incidentally have more than half the votes of the Republican presidential primary, are two people that most of them think would have a tough time getting elected president.
Yeah, and I'm fascinated by Bernie Sanders in that he's certainly not a kid. He's 74. But age isn't what it used to be, and his health seems to be fine. But everything in the Senate, everything in Congress for that matter, starts with how long you've been there. How long you've been there and the work you've done and how you've built up your reputation, the committees you sit on, and you gain authority and thump through the years. Prior to him announcing and him becoming a national figure, there wasn't a lot known by this guy. What was his Senate career like up to this?
Well, it's interesting because Bernie started off declaring he was a socialist and a democratic socialist and so forth. He served in the House for a number of years. Two things about it. First, he did take a committee assignment, an important one, the Veterans Affairs Committee, and do a fine job at it. I mean, he really is a competent person when it comes to legislating. I was really impressed. And secondly, the speeches you are hearing on the stump by Bernie Sanders, I have heard at every Democratic caucus lunch for the last X number of years. And I say that not to ridicule him, but to suggest he is completely authentic and genuine. This is what he believes. And I think people sense that. And I think that's why he's drawing the support he is.
Do you have any regret? Vice President Biden came out this week in an interview, and late last week, I guess now, saying he regrets not running. You've been a friend of his for many, 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 many years, and you know him well. Do you regret that he's not in the race?
I'm glad he's not in the race. He had just gone through a family tragedy. He and I have had several private conversations about it. And he had reached a point in his career, in his life, with his family, it wasn't the right thing to do. I know he looks at it and says, man, I could emerge out of this field, you know, between Sanders and Hillary Clinton and be a viable candidate, maybe even be the nominee. But it just was not the right moment.
And Senator Clinton, you're supporting Senator Clinton, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, I should say. You know, you'll at least tracking the protocol. If you have too many titles, I believe the correct protocol is the last position held or the highest position held.
Would it be Secretary? Right?
Secretary, yeah. Clinton. Secretary Clinton, you're supporting. And at this point, she continues to struggle with Bernie Sanders on her tail. When does she get some separation?
Well, you know, Iowa is an unusual place. I went there 14 times. I just reminded the president the other night, State of the Union. I said, 8 years ago, we were sitting in Iowa freezing, wondering if you even had a campaign.
Right.
And, of course, he won the Iowa caucus, and that really kicked it off. What a strange experience. I mean, I went to those Iowa caucuses, and these people are streaming in the front door of a high school, and they're saying, Republicans in the cafeteria, Democrats in the gymnasium.
Right. It's a totally different thing.
Senator, when the president left the State of the Union, you guys had a very nice conversation. I know he shakes hands and signs autographs as he leaves the chamber, but it was caught on television. You guys, he patted you on the shoulder. What did he say to you?
Said I couldn't have done it without you. And I feel, you know, that was a very kind and generous thing for him to say. He had many more people who were more responsible. But I believed in him. I encouraged him. I was the first senator to endorse him for 14 months. I was the only senator who endorsed him. And I went to Iowa 14 times and New Hampshire and every place he asked me to go. I believe he's an extraordinary man. I'm glad I supported him. I think he's made a big difference in America.
Steve Scalise, the House whip, was on yesterday or the day before. And he's an eloquent guy. He can put a couple of sentences together. And he holds a position that you're familiar with from the Senate side. And there was a spending bill that got done. There was a transportation bill that got done. I don't want to click my heels too fast here. But if you take this presidential campaign out of it, is there any sort of new mood in Congress to get the people's business done?
No, and I think there's less likelihood that we will get things done. I say that with real regret. We have some chances. The president mentioned criminal justice reform, federal sentencing. That's my bill with Chuck Grassley and with John Cornyn. I have major Republican support for this bill, and we can do this together. But by and large, it's going to be an abbreviated year because of the conventions. It's going to be a year of posturing because of the presidential race. It's going to be really difficult, but I hope a handful of important things can get done. When you take a look at preparing American workers for the new economy, the tools they need, the education, the training, it really makes a difference. The student loan crisis, it is a crisis, Steve. I'm not exaggerating. There are so many young people burdened with debt they can never.
It's the next bubble, people.
It is a huge problem, and we have to deal with it and deal with it honestly. Otherwise, their lives are going to be compromised. In some cases, they're going to be ruined, and it just isn't fair.
Last question, I'll let you go. Is there anything you can do from a federal level to weigh in on the lack of a budget here and the mess that continues?
No, but I'll tell you something. It has reached the point where I was resigned, it was going to get done, and then it took longer and longer and longer. What an embarrassment for this great state. I'm so proud to represent it in Washington, but people come to me and they say, what's going on there? And I can't explain it anymore. You know, there are some things that have been set as standards we have to deal with. Labor, this and that. For goodness sakes, let's get a budget for our state. These other issues can wait for another day.
Do you understand why we can't get Mike Madigan in the room?
I don't get it. I don't know why he wasn't at the last meeting. He never spoke to me before or after as to why he wasn't there. There's plenty of opportunity now, so I hope they do sit down. There's no excuse, no alternative for the leaders sitting in the room working out their differences, painful as it may be.
Have your office call and give him my cell phone. I don't know that he has it because he doesn't call me back.
Won't do much good, Steve.
Thank you, Senator.
Thanks, Steve. Bye-bye.
Senator Dick Durbin in Washington. Very frank, very honest, and, not pulling any punches when it comes to Madigan either. So the best picture category you gave out, Dean will be on in a few minutes. Anything you want us to know before we get to Dean?
No, I think it's interesting. They went with 8 nominees this year as opposed to 10. They went from 5 to 10. Now they're
Nick
back down
the
to 8.
Nick called the 8, too. Look at Nick.
Yeah.
And, Kev, did you keep track of the Mad Max nominations?
Well, Nick was texting me with updates, and last he said was 10, which were the most.
So that's the only thing he missed on. He said 15, and maybe there's only
10. I thought
10.
He said 9 for Mad Max.
I thought he said 15.
Actually, check that. The Revenant had 12. Mad Max second with 10.
Okay. Nick.
Dean, we'll run down all of the Oscars stuff in case you missed any of it here in just a few minutes. Should I take a quick break? Yeah, quick break. We'll come back and get you news next on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah.
Well, a lot of show business news, and frankly, we don't have time for it. We got all the Oscar nominations. I think it's rude of show business They have a lot of news on Oscars Day. Do you agree?
Damn those showbiz people. There actually is one big story this morning, that is the death of Alan Rickman, mm-hmm. played Professor Snapes in Harry Potter films.
Thank you for the identification.
He was in Die Hard, is the villain in the original Die Hard movie.
But he just died. He didn't die from the fall at Nakatomi Towers.
He did not die from that fall. If he has, he's been sick for a very, very long time.
Right.
Sense and Sensibility, Love Actually, his list goes on and on. One of the most beloved stars of the West End in London. He was only 69 years old.
Wow, too young. What, sick for a while?
Just like David Bowie. I hadn't heard of any illness. Like David Bowie, he kept it private. Like David Bowie, cancer. Like David Bowie, only 69 years old.
Speaking of David Bowie, what's the news there?
There will be no memorial at all. The Iman, his wife of over 20 years, has said they're going to just keep things very private just like his life. But this tribute concert that's going to take place in New York City at Carnegie Hall on my birthday, March 31st, mm-hmm. in case you want to buy me a ticket for that.
Yeah, done.
The scalpers right now, the tickets are going for $3,000 a piece. I know you were thinking about spending that much.
Were you thinking, would you be cool with a portion of the seat?
Well, we could maybe like split it or like three or four of us take turns sitting, something like that.
Yeah, seat fillers.
But yesterday, McCartney signs on for the tribute. Paul McCartney, Mick Jagger. Who else signed on? Perry Farrell from Jane's Addiction, the founder of Lollapalooza. Ann Wilson, Elton John is going to be part of it. Lots of huge names, and I suspect there'll be many, many more that will be added to the lineup for that.
And one more before we come back after traffic to do the Oscars, and this is earth-shattering rock, big rock news, big rock star news, big, huge, famous news. You ready? There will be a Friends reunion.
Yes.
Kind of.
Sort of.
Kind of.
Sort of. They're calling this a possible Friends reunion. I'm saying
it's an appearance on a special.
Yeah, it's maybe the first time they've all been in the same room at the same time in 12 years since the show's been off the air. But there's going to be a big TV special for James Burrows, who's one of the most famous television directors for the last 40 years. Mary Tyler Moore, Bob Newhart, Cheers, Frasier, Will and Grace.
What a hack that guy is.
Yeah, no success whatsoever. But he was also had directed quite a few episodes of Friends, and they're saying that that they'll get the six together to honor James Burrow, which probably means about a 15-second, thanks, James. Bye.
Right. Love you, James. Love you. He's the guy. Was he the guy that decided that Monica and Rachel would wear the T-shirts for children on the show that were too tight?
Children's sizes.
Yeah.
Are you complaining about that?
Not at all. Yeah. No, not at all. I just thought that would be tough to go to Thanksgiving with a great Hollywood director because you'd be so bossy. All right, you're sitting here. So it would not be easy.
The sweet potatoes go at the end of the table.
Right. How many biscuits? Take three.
No, I mean take three biscuits.
Right. All right, we'll come back. We'll do the Oscars, and I love the snubs. So let us know about the snubs.
Oh, I got your snubs right here.
Yeah, and
what?
One of,
wait a minute, that sounded wrong.
And one of them is for, I don't know how many straight years, Flo from Progressive Assurance, again, did not get a nomination. Shocking.
That's a TV commercial, not a movie, but...
It's a movie to me.
I'll tell you what, right now, I'll give you a little tease. Alvin and the Chipmunks, nothing this year. No love from the Academy.
It's absolutely outrageous.
Alvin and the Chipmunks.
I'm going to try to calm down while we do traffic with Mary. What do you have, Mary? Tonight, live from where I'm sitting.
Careful. You get a hernia.
Dean Richards will tell you all of the stars.
Keep the doctor standing by. Steve is screaming again.
That have been nominated for Academy Awards, life-changing awards, except for those who lose, who could fade into oblivion, and those who are snubbed who are already ready to get out of the business. Let's go live to Dean. What category are we starting in?
We want to start with the snubs?
Yeah, do the snubs.
I think there's a couple of really significant, one really, really significant thing that we noticed, and we're going down the list. We can't seem to find any African-American person anywhere nominated on this list.
Let me just check. Were there black people in films in 2015?
If you're going to ask the Academy, apparently not.
Okay, but you're pretty sure there were?
That were in films?
Yeah.
I'm going to say the last time I checked, Will Smith was fairly African-American.
I don't know.
In Concussion, I'm going to say that Idris Elba is pretty...
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's African-American.
He's not American, but he's black.
And the guy in Creed?
The guy, Michael B. Jordan, did not get nominated.
No, he's Asian.
The director of Creed, Ryan Coogler, did not get nominated, despite the fact that I hated the movie. I thought that Chirac might get some nominations in technical categories.
Total blow-off of Chirac?
Nothing. Not a single one
about that?
For Chirac whatsoever. Here's what comes, well, straight out of Compton got one nomination for best screenplay. The two writers of Straight Outta Compton, two white guys.
Are they really? Is that true?
Yeah.
I did not know that. How did two white guys write Straight Outta Compton?
Well, you know, Ice Cube is an equal opportunity employer, apparently.
Straight out of Lake Forest.
The mean streets. The mean streets of Barrington coming alive. Yo, word, bro.
Actually, let's write that after the show. Straight out of Kenilworth.
Yo, bro, let's go play racquetball.
Where's my paddle tennis racket? I'm with you. I got you.
Lovey, let's go cruise the strip in our bad ride.
A drive-by is when you can't find parking at Nordstrom.
There's no valet. There doesn't seem to be a valet. I've driven by several times. Thus the expression.
So well, that is outrageous.
So
of
that's
course
interesting.
There were great performances by African Americans.
Not a single actor, not a single director. We're going through other categories to see if this is correct, but this seems like it's a pretty trans, you know, in when there's supposed to be more diversity in Hollywood, when there's supposed to be more inclusion, there sure doesn't seem to be on this list. Just an observation. I think it's very significant that Quentin Tarantino's Hateful Eight did not get nominated for Best Picture. Quentin Tarantino did not get nominated for Best Director for his film. He got a screen.
Is he not liked? Is he the Ted Cruz
of
Hollywood?
He is not liked in Hollywood at all. And, you know, he's openly hostile toward the Hollywood establishment. And, you know, I was talking about this the other day, how the people who make up this Academy, there are thousands and thousands of people. And honestly, the overwhelming body are older people, people over the age of 50 years old. Not that that's super old, but it's significant. You know, between 50 and 90.
Makes it tougher to relate to kid movies.
There are a lot of old white people that comprise this. So it's not a surprise that you know, something like this would happen.
If Singing in the Rain is cutting edge to you, it's too late to have your Oscar vote.
Yeah, so he got the best score. He's nominated for best score. He's nominated for screenplay. And Jennifer Jason Leigh was nominated for her performance. A movie that I thought would do so much better at the Oscars was Bryan Cranston's Trumbo.
Yeah, got nothing.
Wound up getting one nomination for Bryan Cranston. Shockingly, Helen Mirren not getting nominated.
Yeah, she was great in it.
Supporting and also did not get nominated as Best Picture. Also not nominated for Best Picture, Star Wars, Steve Jobs, Hateful Eight, Danish Girl, Carol. These are all films that all the experts
Had a lot of heat.
Thought were going to get some nominations.
And remind me, the expansion to 10, you still have to get 5% of the total vote. Is that right?
Well, it's kind of a complicated formula. You have to get a certain percentage of number one choices. When you put your votes When you do your ranker, you have to get a certain number of, you know, the films that get the most number one picks on the rankers are the ones that get Best Picture. So that's basically how this works and how there can be between 5 and 10 nominees. There wound up being 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 this year.
Mm-hmm.
8 this year.
All right, you want to run through the categories?
Yeah, so for best picture, The Big Short, Bridge of Spies, Brooklyn, Mad Max Fury Road, The Martian, The Revenant, which got the most nominations this morning, 12 nominations. Mad Max got 10. That was number 2, and then tying with 7, The Martian, Carol, Bridge of Spies, each getting 7 apiece. But also nominated for Best Picture, The Martian, The Revenant, Room, and Spotlight.
Gut feeling, even though Spotlight's my favorite movie, I think it's The Revenant.
I believe that The Revenant right now has all of the momentum. As Roger Ebert told me many, many times, can't predict today because now the politics really begin in Hollywood.
Andrea Gutfeld, Best Picture.
I say Spotlight.
Spotlight. I hope you're right. Best actor or actress?
Best actor, Leonardo DiCaprio, who is a virtual shoo-in to win this year.
Did the bear get nominated that ate him?
The bear did not get a single nomination. There should be a best animal category.
There should be a best bear.
There should be. All right. Bryan Cranston got nominated for Trumbo. Michael Fassbender for Steve Jobs. Eddie Redmayne for The Danish Girl. I thought he might have been nominated in the Best Actress category this year, but that was just me.
Mm-hmm.
And Matt Damon got nominated for The Martian.
Who do you like?
I like Leo.
Yeah, I think it's got to be DiCaprio, don't you?
Yeah,
I completely agree. DiCaprio. Yeah, Leo.
I think DiCaprio's going to win. Yeah. For Best Actress, Jennifer Lawrence got the only nomination for this film, Joy. Brie Larson got nominated for the film The Room. Saoirse Ronan for Brooklyn.
Loved her in that, Dean.
She's
I saw that yesterday.
Amazing.
Awesome.
Have you seen Room yet?
No, I'm going to hopefully see that tonight.
Yeah, see Room because Brie Larson's pretty amazing.
You know what Room's about?
What?
I do know.
Yeah,
not
I do.
Exactly a laugh riot.
No, not at all. Who do you think is going to get that, Brie or Saoirse?
Well, Kate Blanchett was also nominated for Carol and Charlotte Rampling for the film 45 Years. I believe that Brie Larson is going to win for Room.
Yeah. Wow, that'd be cool. All right, best supporting.
Supporting, we have Sylvester Stallone for Creed. We have Mark Rylance. He was the
love him.
He was the spy in Bridge of Spies. Christian Bale, who was amazing in
The
Big Short. Mark Ruffalo for Spotlight, who was amazing, and Tom Hardy, who was amazing. This is going to be a hard category to pick.
I think it's Rylance or Christian Bale.
And maybe there might be sort of a career achievement vote for Sylvester Stallone,
like there was
for the Golden Globes.
That's right.
Has he won an Oscar?
I think he did for Rocky.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think he did for Rocky. For Best Supporting Actress, Rooney Mara was nominated for Carol. Kate Winslet, who was great in Steve Jobs. Even though I hated the movie The Hateful Eight, Jennifer Jason Leigh, I got to say, was pretty amazing in that film. Rachel McAdams was amazing in Spotlight. And I think the big snub here is Helen Mirren, who I thought for sure was going to be nominated.
I got no feel for that category. Who do you like?
I'm going to say Kate Winslet won the Golden Globe. So I think, that gives her a little bit of momentum. But
kind of a toss-up, though?
It also, it could go that since there really is not a lead performance in Spotlight, that maybe this is the way of honoring the film Spotlight, and if Revenant's going to wind up being Best Picture, that they give the movie something, so Rachel McAdams gets in as
love
a result
her.
Of that.
And
I would be perfectly happy with any of those performances. They're all pretty great.
I would love to see Rachel McAdams, but I think Jennifer Jason Leigh might get it, and I think if there's anybody I don't like more than Julianne Moore, it's Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Really?
She just bugs me. Oh, God, she doesn't really open her mouth when she talks.
Wow.
So the bear eats Leonardo DiCaprio. Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, well, you didn't see the movie.
No, I didn't see the movie yet.
Okay.
I kind of figured it did, but no.
It's a true story. I don't make stuff up.
Most of the movie is about the bear. I'm surprised that Leo got the best actor nomination.
Yeah, it's called Revenant, subtitle, The Bear.
The bear ate Leo.
Yeah. The bear that ate Leo.
All right, so I know you got a lot of TV you got to do. And
You want best director real quick?
Oh, yeah.
Because that's a big one, too. I just like saying Alejandro González Iñárritu.
Mm-hmm.
He was nominated for The Revenant. Tom McCarthy was nominated for Spotlight. George Miller for Mad Max, Fury Road. Adam McKay for...
Good, I'm glad Adam McKay got a nomination.
The Big Short, yeah. And The Room was also the director for The Room, who's in my scribbly notes here that I took down while they were announcing them. I did not write his name.
And late edition Victory Auto Records for Best Picture.
Oh, yes.
So congratulations
still
to everybody
waiting
involved
for
in
my
that.
Award for that.
Still excited for you.
I don't see any of these movies around for the last 25 years like
Very
Victory Auto Records
for you. Very excited. All right, buddy. I'll see you. Bye. John McDonough coming up live from Canada where he has defected. Before we get to that and the big story, we get to this on 720.
Let's go.
3, 2, 1.
The Steve Cochran Show presents Breakfast with a Blackhawk, sponsored by MB Financial Bank. MB means business.
gets old, kids. John McDonough, the president and CEO of your Chicago Blackhawks, joins us from north of the border. You weren't deported, were you?
Not yet. Jay might be. He's been wandering around Montreal wearing a Stanley Cup ring, trying to be noticed. So they might try to get him back in the States soon.
In Montreal, wearing a Stanley Cup ring has got to be like a beautiful girl in a low-cut dress. Doesn't everybody look?
Yeah, it's. I didn't wear mine last night, but it's. I think it's about as big as you can get here. This is the Mecca. I could say, I'd probably say Toronto and Montreal are the Mecca. So I'm sure the Stanley Cup ring would play pretty big here.
And Jay Blunk runs around and he flashes it so it reflects off the sunlight, that kind of move?
When you have nothing else going for you, you've got to try something like that. Hey, look at me.
Well, listen, you got to be very excited about the fact that the fellas are playing as well as they've played all year. And maybe even bigger news, because obviously it's nice to win. Your coach, Coach Q, you guys got another deal done. So I guess I'd say thank you to you first. Thanks for getting them re-signed.
Well, that's great, Steve. Thank you. And I really enjoy hearing him on your show all the time with you and Dave, and he has a lot of fun. But he's just been a perfect fit for us since day one. He has the right touch with this group. He's kind of a less is more coach. He has the respect of the players, the veterans. The young players know that they've got to earn their ice time. And it's just a very healthy culture that Joel has created. But he's the ultimate winner. Soon he's going to be the second winningest coach in the history of the NHL, behind Scotty, who is our senior advisor, obviously. But it's something Rocky and Stan and Al and I have talked about for probably 2 or 3 months, and it culminated, good timing, it culminated in concluding the other night. But we're very proud of Joel.
Yeah, and when you think back to when you made that coaching change in the early days, it was not an easy decision to make at the time. Was there something in particular that jumped off the page outside from the fact that he was already a proven NHL winner?
Well, in the conversations that I had with him before he was hired, I mean, he was just very candid. He didn't lead with his successes, really. He led with his flaws, and it just I just admired that. And he is he's a man's man, and he's a guy that is fun. You know, I hear the fun side of him on your show. Uh-huh. We enjoy being around him. He's got that intense look on the bench, and he's all business when it comes to hockey. But off the ice, he's a gentleman, he's a lot of fun, and we're so proud of him.
John, good morning. How do you assess the job that Stan Bowman has done to reconfigure this roster to the point where victory tonight pulls you into a tie with the Dallas Stars atop the Central, which looked like that would be a long shot just like about 3 weeks ago?
Well, so far, I think Stan's body of work, Dave, he's been the master of reinvention. When you have a salary cap and you have a hard cap and you only have a finite amount to spend, you've got to reinvent that roster every year. And he has the ability to do that. And there's just a different model now. A few years ago, he introduced the concept of going after these college free agents and the European free agents, which has brought us Trevor Van Riemsdyk, Artemi Panarin, Eric Gustafson, and, you know, we've got our core of 7 or 8 players together, and they're going to be here for a while longer, and it's a very, very strong core. It's just putting those players around them, that supporting cast, those complementary players, that we have to be better than anybody in the NHL. Stan's done a terrific job. I'm so proud of him. He's very measured. He's very understated. He's a real deep thinker. And no knee-jerk decisions, but he, again, has just been a wonderful hire and a perfect fit for the Blackhawks.
One of the really good things you have instituted with the Blackhawks organization, as Q would say, is fan interactivity. And every company is trying to do it now, but it's more than, hey, send us your comments on something. And the one goal thing I think is really cool. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because I think, if I'm right about that, the numbers on the fans' interaction with you as far as people sending in their one goal, what is their one goal? It's been pretty astounding. I think you guys are surprised about it, right?
Yeah, we are. It's, I think there's 44 million views on Facebook and 14 million videos on Facebook, and it's just been huge. Day one when we got there, we said that you know, there's got to be a theme. There's got to be some substance to what we're doing, and we met with some ad agencies and everything, and it just didn't work. And so we just kind of put together, what are we really trying to say? And it was simply that our organization has one goal, and it's the continuity with our organization, whether it's with Joel or with Stan or with Al or the players. It's been a lot of continuity, and this one goal has been with us now for, I think, 8+ years. But the unique iterations that our agency, Ogilvy Chicago, has come up with, well, where they've kind of spun this into challenging our fans to submit, what's your goal? And then trying to fulfill some lifelong dreams from these fans. And I think it's been incredibly successful. There's going to be a few that are going to be debuting in the near future, but we've had a lot of fun with it. And certainly we think there's a lot of life in the whole One Goal campaign.
It's President and CEO of the Chicago Blackhawks, John McDonough, in the Breakfast of the Blackhawks segment, sponsored by our friends at MB Financial Bank. Dave?
And, you know, the one thing I was going to add to that, John, is I think the thing that really makes it work in those videos is the players. I mean, your guys are so good with the winners. I mean, that's the amazing part to me.
You know, Dave, for professional athletes, the best way to summarize it, our guys get it. They understand, Steve. I know you've talked about this.
Well, they actually like the fans. You know, I mean, what a crazy concept. They actually like the paying customers.
They like the fans. They get it. I think they realize that they have been a part of something very unique, a special era in our city's history, in Blackhawks history. And there's a great sense of humility. You know, we call it at our place, we call it kind of a humble swagger. The fact that they've achieved a lot and the way they carry themselves. But there's a great deal of humility. And a lot of this, quite frankly, comes from Rocky Wirtz. From day one, he's kind of set the course for all of this. And, you know, we're kind of taking his lead. And he's the master of relationships and a great, great leader and a great sounding board for me. But our guys really get the big picture. They do enjoy it. They enjoy the fan interaction. They enjoy coming to the Blackhawks convention. They enjoy coming on with you. They understand the importance of media, and they like it. And I think they're very good at it.
One of the, you know, Dave, you know this because you've been in this position a million times. But one of the best things is when the Hawks win, you get a 3 stars, and then one of the TV guys around the ice and interviewing the players. And Kane's great with thanking the fans. But everybody on the team, and it's not like they're reading from a script.
Right.
Everybody on the team looks around another packed house at the Madhouse and says, thanks. You know, we couldn't do it without you. And it's not some pre-written thing. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
Well, Steve, you know, we recognize there's no sense of entitlement despite the standard.
Oh, I have one. I have a total sense of entitlement.
We're going to get to that next. But there's no entitlement. These guys, we realize that we're not entitled to one more fan. We're not entitled to one more viewer, one more listener, one more win. And I think it's just that humble and hungry approach every day that these guys take that make them very, very different.
Well, John, after you get the win over Montreal tonight, you go on to Toronto, and you guys have some other business at the Hockey Hall of Fame tomorrow, huh?
Jewelry business.
Yeah, we've got some jewelry business for the, as we've said, One Goal for the third time. We're presenting the Hockey Hall of Fame with a Jonathan Toews Stanley Cup ring. We'll be giving it this year to Phil Pritchard. In previous years, we had given it to former Blackhawk Bill Hay. And it's a tradition that was started a few years ago by Brian Burke, who's now president of hockey operations for the Calgary Flames, that every team who wins the Stanley Cup presents the Hockey Hall of Fame with the ring. So we go down there, and every time we go there, it's loaded with Blackhawks fans, and they're so proud of it. And it's a very, very, very nice ceremony. So we'll be doing that sometime tomorrow, and we leave Montreal tonight after the game. We get into Toronto tomorrow morning, and then we'll head over to the Hockey Hall of Fame. But it's a lot of fun, and I hope there are many more visits in our future.
I like our chances. Cindy Savas, S-A-V-V-A-S, from Addison, gives us our question. on Breakfast with the Blackhawk. And the question, John, for you is, of all these years, and I go back to the beginning of when you came over, and you didn't have an office, you didn't have a desk, all the way through a third cup, and obviously this phone call, a highlight for you. What was your most memorable year and why, from Cindy? Got to be tough to pick, but what was your most memorable year and why?
Well, I'll tell you, I think it was late in the 08-09 season. When we were really grinding it out, Steve, and we made so many changes in our organization, and it was really, really grueling, and there was just a lot of heavy lifting, and you just kind of felt you were hoping that the fans felt the vibration of change coming through our organization. But late in the third period of a game that we were leading in the 08-09 season, a fan in the 300 section unfurled a huge banner, and it just said, "The pride is back." And it kind of struck a nerve with me. It was really the first time that I felt as if, okay, we're going in the right direction. This was about the time we had just had the outdoor game at Wrigley Field, and the team was playing better, and I think we had acquired Brian Campbell and Cristobal Huey and some other things. But it was, I'll never forget that. It was kind of a watershed moment where, you know, they kind of sensed that good things could be coming. So I'll never forget that moment. It kind of teared me up a little bit.
No kidding. A real lump in the throat moment for Blackhawk fans. Well, you know, we're proud of all of you guys at the organization, and get a couple more on the road and have fun at the Hall of Fame.
Thank you, Steve. Our wins sound so much better on WGN Radio. So let's get another one tonight.
Thanks, but I appreciate it. That's President and CEO of your Chicago Blackhawks, John McDonough. And from John McDonough to Jay Blunk on the business side and everybody over there, they're just a pleasure to work with.
Really are. And I think, you know, what John said about Stan Bowman, the job he's done with the roster, obviously Q. I mean, they've had the continuity. And that, I mean,
it's a big deal.
There's a lot to be said for that.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
Stan Bowman is a magician. It was unbelievable.
Because when you win three championships and
well, everybody wants to play here, but you still got to make the math
you
work.
You still, that's the big thing. Yeah. You really have to figure it out.
Crazy.
And he's done a great job.
I'll give you a perfect example. Mary was offered a multi-year deal with the Hawks, and she turned it down to stay with his show. And I appreciate that kind of loyalty.
Thanks. But if it was the Powerball,
Yeah, so much for that, Steve.
I appreciate the loyalty. What is the traffic situation?
4-3-4-5-0-0. That's MWUClinics.com or call 630-743-4500. The Midwestern University Multi-Specialty Clinic, your family's home for health care.
Steve Grzanich of the news in about a minute. Next hour, Ava Sapelsa, Mark's daughter, will join us from last summer. You remember she was in and sang beautifully?
She was wonderful.
And she will sing again live on the show in the next hour. And Dave Ennett has a Hawkopedia. Next hour as well.
I do.
Tomorrow on the show, Stump the Old People.
Oh, we're going to do that?
It's the revenge of the millennials.
I mean, you guys are going to do that?
Stump the Old People and Andrea.
Thank you, Steve.
Yes. Very busy morning here at the Mighty 720. The three Powerball winners, when they come forward, hopefully will have done their organization themselves and have a money manager and an agent, and keep the real danger to anybody that was a Powerball winner last night of the three is their own family and friends.
Oh, I agree.
And anyone they've ever known who will now come out of the woodwork and go, "Where's mine?"
Yes, yes. Did you hear the there were two other pretty big winners in the state of Illinois, one in Glenview and one in Schaumburg. They each won $1 million.
So Dave, let's go to Dave on this.
Okay.
Now Dave, you volunteered to buy tickets for the show, which is very nice of you.
Mm-hmm.
And you went out and bought tickets.
I did.
Where did you buy the tickets in relation to where you live?
Probably about half a mile, maybe a mile from my house.
And I know that of the general geographical area, the Glenview location that sold the $1 million ticket
right. Is
a very easy drive for you.
That's at a Sitco.
It wouldn't have been too far.
Yeah. I mean, less than 10 minutes. If I were to draw a concentric circle from the Ennett compound outwardly, it would be within that circle in the 10-minute circle.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So don't you think it was really selfish of you not to go to that Sitco?
Well, it wasn't exactly on my way.
Well, for $1.5 billion, you could have gone an extra 10 minutes.
That wasn't $1.5 billion. It was just
for
a million.
For a million, he could have swung by.
Yeah, but then, okay, we would have divided it six ways.
Six people, it's $166,000 apiece.
Okay, really?
It's about $100,000 after taxes.
Okay, so.
I'm fine with that.
To go out of my way for that?
Well, it's nothing to you and me, but the rest of the show.
Right? Are you kidding me? Nice, Dave.
Yeah, thanks, Dave.
Yeah.
And Schaumburg?
I'm kidding, it's more than we make in 5 years.
Schaumburg had a $1 million winner?
Schaumburg had a $1 million winner that was purchased at the newsstand at Woodfield Mall.
Oh, by the way, Kevin lives out that way.
Kevin doesn't live at Woodfield Mall.
I have a place out there.
A double
How far are you from Woodfield Mall?
Probably 15, 20 minutes, but I'm also probably 5 or 10 minutes from that sitco. So.
Yeah, but you weren't buying tickets.
No, it wasn't my job yesterday.
Yeah, Dave, you volunteered.
Okay.
Dave, you failed us.
This is what, see,
yeah, that's
no
bad.
Good deed goes unpunished.
Maybe Dave should give each of us $100,000.
Yeah. Well, if you give it to everybody else on the show. I mean, I'm fine. Give it to everybody else on the show.
Yeah,
I have $100,000 in my wallet right now.
I'll take it.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Which is why my back is bad. all right, it's 9:14. Before we get to the Hawkopedia, around the country, the number one topic this morning is the pins and needles over tonight's Republican debate. Is anybody going to watch?
There's a debate tonight?
I'm not even sure I'm going to watch.
Come on. We have to watch.
I agreed I'd live tweet these. And even as much as I like politics, I don't want to watch.
You've done everyone. This Chuck Todd, though, said this is going to be a good one. This could get nasty.
They love me. They love me.
Yeah. Carly Fiorina's not going to be on the stage this time.
How many are there?
Rand Paul walked. Seven.
Rand Paul walked.
Seven.
Right.
Yeah.
Sleepy, dopey duck.
How many more of these do we have to watch?
I think we're going to have a couple more.
Your tweets are pretty entertaining, though, Steve.
Just come on.
So
yeah.
I've got to do it?
You got a perfect record so far. You have to do it.
It starts late, too. It's at 8 o'clock.
It does? Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Oh.
Maybe just tweet the undercard and then move on.
I mean, that's more reasonable.
Tweet the first 10 minutes and then...
But here's the problem. Once they start, I can't stop.
I know.
It's got to keep going. And to see these big bucket of nerds fight with each other... Here's the thing. I'll give Trump credit for this. And you know I'm not a Trump fan. But Trump is a New York guy.
Mm-hmm.
So when he gets in fights, he gets nasty right away. So it's tough to compete with him. You know, Jeb Bush is like one poke in the chest away from, I know you are, but what am I? So, but tonight you got Christie. Christie could get nasty.
Christie could get nasty?
I'd like to see a Christie-Trump throwdown.
Oh, that'd be good.
Where they just go New York on each other.
Yeah.
So
Bush you just tend to feel bad for anymore. He's got no game.
He really doesn't. I will. All right. I'll live tweet it.
Okay,
I'll live
good.
Tweet the debate
good.
Tonight.
All right.
Was it Fox Business?
Yes, Fox Business.
Maybe I could cancel that on my cable this afternoon before it starts. It's 9:16, Dave. Could you entertain and educate us on hockey today, Dave, with the Hawkopedia?
No, not after getting all the grief about not going to the sitco station.
Please.
Okay.
All right, then.
Blackhawks Radio.
720 WGN.
Uh-huh. The Steve Cochran Show presents Hawk
Chicago-opedia.
We may get a fracas here before it all ends.
A what?
Sponsored by Freshwave. If it stinks like a lottery fix, like a Powerball jacked up fix.
No.
Then you're going to need Freshwave. That's not the slogan?
That's not it.
What's the slogan, Kev?
The official deodorizer of your Chicago Blackhawks.
All right, so let's go to Dave on this. What's today's term?
Embellishment.
Embellishment.
Embellishment. Seemed like on the morning the Oscar nominations, only appropriate to mention hockey's version of the Best Actor Award, the penalty for embellishment.
So embellishment would be when someone does what?
Well, if you were watching the game the other night between the Blackhawks and Nashville on Tuesday, you saw Predators forward Craig Smith sent off in the second period for embellishment. It's not something that's called all the time. It's still not all that common a penalty, but it is a way to crack down on players trying to draw penalties with a little flair for the dramatic.
Total judgment call on the officials.
It is. It is totally just if they think a guy's taking a dive. Basically, the NHL defines embellishment as any player who blatantly dives, embellishes a fall or a reaction, or who feigns an injury.
So if you had a player that got brushed with an opponent's stick... And he dropped to one knee and went, why? And then claimed he was Nancy Kerrigan. That would be embellishment?
That could be embellishment,
okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I've not seen that happen, though.
Yeah, it's a common move.
But the rule carries with it a scale for fines for players who are penalized for embellishing or diving in an effort to get a penalty call. The rule is really designed to punish the serial embellishers. The first incident draws a warning, the second one a $2,000 fine, and the fines increase by $1,000. And after repeated offenses by one team, the head coach is also subject to fines starting at $2,000.
That's not a lot of money.
It doesn't seem, you know, it really isn't. That's the one thing about this.
Because in the NBA, floppers get teed up, don't they?
Hey, they get fined a lot more.
Yeah, so you get a technical plus the fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, $1,000. I mean, it's a lot of money in the real world. It's not a lot of money in professional sports.
Yeah, you wouldn't think so.
And I don't understand how the fine goes down when you get more of them. You know, what they need to do? If the first fine's $2,000, it's $1,000 after that. They need to turn the fine system over to the city of Chicago.
No, it's not $1,000. It goes up by $1,000.
Oh, it goes
so
up $1,000
each time. Four, five.
All right. Well, here's the way it works in the state of Illinois and yes. The city of Chicago.
Yes.
First ticket's $1.50. Second ticket's $12,000. So you need to obviously have them run this for the NHL.
I think that's a good idea.
Embellishment!
That's your Hawkopedia for today.
920. Back after this on 720 WGN. Lots of other stories that have taken a back seat to the busy morning that we've had around here, like the backstory on how El Chapo was caught. It seems a Spanish soap opera actress had a long-term connection of sorts with El Chapo that started with his infatuation with her. He sent her a letter, and then she responded in some form through intermediaries. They occasionally texted. And El Chapo expressed a desire to have his life story told. He, at that point, was connected, again through intermediaries, to Sean Penn. That's how the meeting got set up. So, in the meantime, because somehow word leaked out that this Spanish actress was, in fact, in contact with El Chapo, Mexican authorities tapped her phone. That allowed them to also get information that she was in conversations, text conversations and phone conversations, with Sean Penn. So instead of sweeping in and arresting both of them, they thought, perfect, they're going to lead us right to El Chapo. And that's exactly what they did. They followed the conversations for a significant period of time, leading up to the October raid, where there was a pitched gun battle before El Chapo was, in fact, taken into custody this past weekend. Or the October interview, I should say, leading to the pitch gun battle this past weekend where he was actually caught.
Very Shakespearean, though, that Sean...
Well, kind of high end.
Sean Penn thinks, oh, you know, she's arranging this high pitch, this big meeting, when he's actually, El Chapo's doing it to meet, to hook up with her.
That was definitely part of it. Yeah, and there's no reason to believe they actually did, but certainly that was on his agenda.
Oh, of course.
But he wanted his life story told, so he was agreeing to meet with Sean Penn.
He probably went, Sean who?
He didn't know him.
All right.
No, he didn't know him. She had to explain to him who he was. Another story that really flew under the radar, and this is from the Chicago Tribune, the worst cities in Illinois for families. Did you look at this list?
Yeah.
So if you have a family, where is the worst place for you to be living? And there's several, you know, polls that are tied to this. But Chicago is the ninth worst city in the state of Illinois for families.
I believe that probably mainly because it's so expensive.
I think that's right.
Think about it.
I think that's right. I mean, they factored violence into it. However, the top five most violent spots in the city were Danville, Rockford, Mount Vernon, Harvey, and East St. Louis. Yeah. East St. Louis and Harvey sort of jumped to mind. Did you think of Danville or Rockford as being violent?
No. No, especially not Danville.
So,
I have friends who live in Danville.
I mean, Mount Vernon, obviously, not obviously, but you certainly hear things about Mount Vernon. Education, health, and safety. Chicago ranked 143rd in the state. Affordability, 160th. elite high schools, some of the best in the state, a point of pride. But families can't afford to go to the most elite high schools. Mm-hmm. So it's become tougher. The end run here, it's been tough. It's become tougher than ever for families to make a go of it in Chicago. It's in the Chicago Tribune at chicagotribune.com if you care to check that out.
Washington, Illinois, our friends in Washington, they were named number 3. That's pretty cool.
It's most livable.
Most livable, yeah.
Right.
Best cities.
And finally, we should check with Orion on this maybe in a few minutes. There's a farm in Virginia that's looking for volunteers to snuggle with baby goats.
Aww.
So a Virginia farm got an overwhelming response from people who volunteered to snuggle with their baby goats. That's not code, Dave. Caramont Farm is expecting the baby goats called Kids to be born in mid-February. Farm looking for helpers to bottle feed and keep the goats warm. The baby goats get heaters, hay, and even tiny sweaters.
But they need people. They need the body heat.
Need body heat as well.
Why don't you send Leo?
They like a snuggle.
Yeah.
Send Leo.
DiCaprio.
What, does he snuggle with goats?
Not a goat in the movie.
You mean
didn't you see the movie?
No.
I thought you did.
Which movie are we talking about?
Revenant.
Oh, that's a bear.
No.
There's a goat moment in there?
No, I think a horse is involved.
He snuggles with a horse?
Yeah.
What?
Is that true?
Not going any further.
Well, I'm not going to see it.
I didn't even see it.
Is this gross? Is this bestiality?
No, it's not bestiality. It's gross. It's a very violent, hard to watch at sometimes film.
It's very cold where he is. Keep that in mind.
Oh, this is gross.
So he warms himself on the horse parts?
That's gross. Does he really?
Is that what we're talking about?
Do you want us to tell you?
No, don't tell anyone.
Well, no. I want a clue around it here because I'm afraid it's too blatant.
We want to fast forward through it.
So you're saying he's cold.
Mm-hmm.
He warms himself on the horse.
Not on it.
In it?
Well, not in it. He'd have to kill the horse. He warms himself by snuggling with the horse parts.
You're close.
I don't want to ruin it.
Yeah.
But you said it's not sex with an animal, right?
No.
No.
This film got 12
nominations.
He's just
very cold. And keep in mind, animal bodies are very warm.
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, I'm not going to see a movie where he guts the horse and climbs into it.
Did he have the horse pee
on him? Bing, 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 bing. That's what he does. He guts it and he climbs into it.
Is that what he does? For real?
That's what I heard.
That's gross.
You got to see it. It's a really
Kevin
good
saw
it. Oh, yeah. Oh, I got to see that.
This is why I really don't know if I want to go see
the whole
movie.
He just actually goes around, kills horses, and lays in them. Actually, that's a majority of the movie.
That's what the Revenant means.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Where's the goat?
So why not a goat?
Where's the goat come in?
Is a goat smaller?
He won't fit in the goat.
No. You guys are weird.
We're just telling you what happened in the movie.
This is weird stuff.
You're weird. You're weird that you went to the movie. You're weird that you watched it. This is on YouTube.
All right.
It's on the two of you.
Sorry.
The Revenant.
Since I heard this goat story, I thought about it.
I'm not seeing that. See Brooklyn. That's a happy movie.
Yeah, I do want to see that.
Tell you a nice little story about snuggling with goats and suddenly you're slicing horses open and crawling inside them. Unbelievable. It's outrageous. I mean, where is out in the woods or where did he find the horse?
Well, yeah, the whole movie's out in the woods.
So these are wild horses?
This is not a wild horse. He's. I feel
Wasn't
like
there like an on. IKEA nearby that he could just go into?
It's not like horses are
it's
us.
Like set in the 1800s,
like
right?
Oh, there's Indians around, Native Americans.
Mm-hmm.
So they all have horses.
Wow.
And he encounters a lot of them.
So again,
that's a good way to put it.
So again, at Caramont Farm in Virginia, you can snuggle with baby goats.
This is a sweet story, though, on a much different level.
Not after this, they won't want to snuggle with baby goats.
Mary needs therapy from going to see The Revenant.
I didn't even see it yet.
Well, how do you know the story?
Somebody told me that.
Well, it doesn't mean you ought to repeat it to me, because now I got to get it out of my head.
Kevin did it.
But you and Kevin are both suspended. I don't know from what. You're just suspended.
From seeing The Revenant?
Yes, because you saw The Revenant.
I didn't see it.
I'm suspending both of you. I'm suspending you for seeing it, Kevin, and you for commenting on it, Mary.
So sorry.
Freak show movie.
Boy.
But I won't be in tomorrow.
So... All right, let's take a break, come back at your big story in a moment. And speaking of Orion, if he is willing, he'll join us in a moment as well on 720 WGN.
He's got eyes crystallized, the kind you hold with both your hands.
Save Us a Belson. Remember when she was in last summer?
He's got the sunrise in the back pocket of his pants. And he's got my words on the tip of his tongue.
We all tend to say that our children are much more talented than we are. But I remember when your dad called me to say, Ava's doing unbelievable stuff musically, and then you came in. He was not quite exuberant enough. Nice to see you again. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Thanks for coming back. How's school?
School's great. It's awesome. I'm looking forward to going back in a few days.
And it's a special musical or a music-centered school for artists and people with those type of brains, which you clearly have. What's the school called?
Berklee College of Music
and
in
Boston. How many kids are there?
About 4,000, I believe.
Oh, it's bigger than I thought it would be.
Mm-hmm.
And you're having a blast.
Yep, loving every minute of it.
The song we just heard is what?
Out of Love.
From what? There was like a compilation disc?
No, that's actually, it's just on my SoundCloud right now, which is Ava Sapelsa on SoundCloud.
Oh, we had that on a disc of something, didn't we?
Yeah, but we ditched the CDs because that's just how millennials do it, and I played it offline, so.
Right, but
we have the disc. Yeah,
there is a compilation. I'm just talking about your
CD.
Rights fees. You know, for your rights fees down the road, it's on some sort of compilation.
Yeah,
disc.
It's singer songwriter collection from the Interlochen Arts Academy.
There you go.
Oh well, there is that one. My stuff is on a few different different CDs right now. So
all right, so I'm going to have to take over your career and start. So tell me what you've done since we saw you last summer.
Since last summer, I've completed my first semester at Berklee. I've been playing some shows. I'm in a band now back at school.
What kind of band?
It's a ska band, if you know what genre is.
That's where I got started. Remember when I was in ska? I did ska. Why ska?
You know, they needed a vocalist, and they posted looking for a vocalist. And
Good for you. Grab the
might
opportunity.
As well, I don't know anything about ska music. Might as well.
How cool is that?
Might as well audition, and I ended up getting it. I had to listen to some ska music afterwards to figure out what I was actually going to sing.
Yeah, but I'm totally down with ska.
Exactly.
So you guys play out every weekend?
We're just in the process of writing. It's a huge band. There's all these horns and
you know,
a full band. Yeah, so I'm writing with one of the drummers, and next semester we're planning on playing out. And then I've got some of my own shows as well in Boston next semester.
Is Boston a good music scene?
It's good for, I think, for college students. You know, it's not quite as big as Chicago and then, of course, L.A. and New York. But for someone at my level starting out, it's small enough that it's easy to break into, which is really nice.
And is your ska stuff around anywhere? Can we play any of that?
Do you know who started initially as a ska band?
I do know.
Your head's going to spin.
Who?
Gwen Stefani.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a terrible person.
Yeah, no doubt started that as a ska band.
But I see you as a singer-songrateer.
Yes, I'm not.
Is that what you feel like your future is?
I identify as a singer-songwriter, yeah. And that's my plan for life. It's just a fun performance opportunity to do that, the ska band. But I mostly am focusing on my own writing and playing my own music.
And for people listening who have kids who have some musical ability and maybe they'd like to know more about this school, tell me about the experience. Is it all collaborative or is it classroom study traditionally, or what do you do?
So at Berklee, it is a traditional college setting, so I have to take a certain amount of liberal arts classes. So I'm getting a core curriculum, you know, in English, and there's some math and science involved. And then a lot of it is like my first year's ton of core music, so music theory, ear training, kind of like the science behind it, like the math of music, which is hard, but it's good to know. It really helps you become a better musician. And then you develop a major, and you go into a major, and I'm planning on doing songwriting and music business, and you focus in on that, but it is really collaborative because everyone is a musician. So, you know, some of my closest friends are incredible drummers and guitarists, and then I end up collaborating with them on my own time as well.
You're a sophomore?
I'm a freshman.
Freshman, sorry. And the longer you're in school, the less patience you have for the regular classes because you just want to play and get with your friends and figure out what you're doing musically. How do you stay disciplined to do the classwork? Other than the fact that I know your mom and dad.
Yeah, well, I actually enjoy it. They have great teachers. So even my English class, which, you know, I'd rather be doing music, it really helps supplement it because, you know, it's writing poetry and short stories. But also, they do have a really strict attendance policy, stricter than, I think, most colleges. So,
yeah,
you know, you can't,
them.
I think, 3 absences and you fail the course. So they really, you have to go. But even if there wasn't that, you know, I still really enjoy the other classes. So
now, I'm, you know, lucky in this position to have known a lot of people through the years in music and still come across a lot of people in music. It's amazing how many people have achieved at the highest level who have real problems playing in front of their friends. Like they just completely freaked out. They don't want to try new stuff. They don't want to show their closest friends new stuff. How do you break that wall down? I don't think you've had a problem with it, have you?
You know, I actually used to when I first started writing. I didn't even want to show my parents. It took me a while.
Is it just
to
a fear
them.
Of being judged? Like,
I think, yeah, it's the people closest to you. It's their opinions that matter the most. Yeah. Or you could be playing to, you know, 100 or 1,000 people you don't know, and, you know, it doesn't even matter as much as the one person that you're closest to. So I think there's some of that. I've gotten past that just because most of my closest friends are musicians as well, so I like their advice, and I like to get their critiques, but I definitely see where that comes in. And
So you're afraid to play in front of Andrea because you need her approval?
Oh, I think you're amazing.
Oh, thank you so much.
What do you want to play for us?
This is a new song that I wrote, and it's called Finish Line. And as I'm sure a lot of people know in Chicago, about 4 years ago, my dad publicly went to treatment for alcoholism.
Right.
And that was a really big impact on our family, but probably in a different way than a lot of people know. It was actually very, like, inspiring to me, especially just to see how, you know, he came forward in front of so many people, and it took a lot of strength and really set a good example for me, I think, growing up, especially in high school and everything. So,
what an honor that you did this for your dad. When did you tell him you did it?
Beginning of December. I worked on it for a really long time because it took me, you know, 4 years to actually write this song. I remember when he told us he was going to treatment, he said, "Ava, I've got new songwriting material for you." And to lighten the mood a little bit, of course, you know, I didn't really feel like writing one at the time. And now 4 years later, I finally did. So,
all right, whenever you're ready.
He tucks me in, turns out the light. Looks under my bed, no monsters in sight. He is the hero in my life. He goes downstairs and counts to 10. He's trying hard not to cave in, but the top shelf is haunting him. And nobody knows the trouble he's in, like hell on earth. He wants to quit, but he needs the fire. He takes a sip and lets it burn him down. That sweet relief, it tastes so bad, 'cause his sleeping children take over his head. He never lets me know what daddy drinks before bed. And the pain, it eats him alive, 'cause he fears that he's disappointing his family, his wife. Trapped inside this anonymous life, he lets it burn him down. One day at a time, he fights for sobriety, living in a war that he's battling silently. He can almost see the other side, 12 steps away from the winning mile, and he'll make it just in time. We'll be waiting at the finish line. Since he got clean, that sweet surrender set him free. He lives his life in the glow of serenity. And he shows me that strength comes from facing your demons, and wisdom comes from admitting your weakness. He doesn't know, but he teaches me greatness with every day he's free. Steps away from the winning mile,
just in time. Dad, we're on your side.
I got nothing. Anybody want to jump in? That's amazing. That is
absolutely
amazing.
Thank you so much.
Do you write the lyrics and then put the music to it, or is it kind of a pairing?
It was kind of
so moving.
Kind of together, but thank you so much. But this one especially, I did. It took me, I think this is the longest I've ever taken to write a song. So I started together, but I had some lyrical ideas going in. My mom helped me take, like, bounce some ideas, you know, just because it was such like a family.
It's so incredibly personal.
That, yeah, you know, you wanted to capture it perfectly. So I had some lyrical ideas going in, but most of it's all together.
Did you run it by your brother?
Wow.
I showed it to him around the same time as my dad, because he's off in, you know, some foreign country. So,
you know, I've been friends with your dad since before you were you, and I, you know. To get it at the level you get it is amazing.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Very proud of you.
Thank you.
You do another one for us?
Yeah.
All right, stick around. We'll come back. We'll do it in a second. And when I say we, I mean you. I'll sit here. This is 720 WGN. It is a couple of minutes before 10, and Bill and Wendy will join us in just a second. And I know how much Wendy loves you because she got a chance to meet you last summer. And Wendy has already forgotten more about music than I'll ever know. But will you do one more for us?
Yeah.
All right, so what? Let me turn your mic on here. Which one are you going to do?
This one is called Close to Home.
Close to Home. Again, Ava Sapelsa.
Maybe I'm lost inside my head. Maybe I'm lost in words unsaid. Maybe I'm lost in thoughts unspoken. Could it be I'm just wandering down a road I've never been, living lives that I've never believed in? Maybe I'm just waiting for something to change. Maybe I'm just trying to stay dry in the rain. But maybe that's just asking too much. But I'm looking, searching for something I don't understand. I'm trying, failing, one step forward and two steps back. I know I can't let myself go. But all that I know is that my doubts live close. My doubts live close to home. Always telling you to find yourself. Well, I already found myself. My only problem is I'm locked inside. Stuck on merry-go-rounds in my mind, or I can't remember what I'm trying to find. I can only see what I've left behind. But maybe I'm just waiting for something to change. Maybe I'm just trying to stay dry in the rain. But maybe that's just asking too much. But I'm looking, searching for something I don't understand. I'm trying, failing, one step forward and two steps back. I know I can't let myself go. But all that I know is that my doubts live close. My doubts live close to home. All I can be, all I'll never be, is making me weak. Sometimes forget to breathe.
on my knees, screaming, help me, please. Screaming, save me, please. Think I'm in too deep, but I'm looking, searching for something I don't understand. I'm trying, failing, one step forward and two steps back. I know I can't let myself go, but all that I know is that my doubts live close. All I really know, and all that I know, is that my doubts live close. My doubts live close to home.
Amazing. Just, you know what? Check, please.
Wow. Mic drop.
Ava Sapilsa, if people want to keep track of what you're doing musically, where do they go?
I've got a
hold on. I got to find a mic that works for you. There you go.
There you go. I've got a website, which is avasapelsa.com, and then a Facebook page as well, which is facebook.com/avasapelsamusic, or you can just search Ava Sapilsa, and a YouTube as well, which has a live video of the song Finish Line that I played earlier. You can find on YouTube as well as my SoundCloud, which is SoundCloud/Ava-Sapilsa.
The texts are way, way too many to read, but in regards to the song you wrote about your dad, I have a brother in recovery. The song was so beautiful, brought me to tears. Bravo. And they go on and on and on.
That's so nice.
A lot of people that you move by your work. And at your age, to get that,
thank you so much.
Wendy, I told her when she turns into a diva and stops returning my calls, I hope she calls you.
You can call me. I'm covered in goosebumps. Beautiful. Oh,
thank
really,
you.
Really nice. Thank you. Thank you for taking some time to come in. I know you got to rush back to school.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a great time. It's great to see you all again.
Great to see you and great to see your mom. All right. Let's collect ourselves here for a minute. By the way, Wendy, as usual, when she sang the song about her dad, I was a rock. Just so you know. I know you weren't in the room then, but
you're
you know
a puddle.
I am.
You were a puddle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.